On today's show, we'll talk about the disaster that is the Rio Olympics. Security, a major problem. Public health, a major problem.
Can I start? You didn't say classes in session.
I'm trying a different thing today. I'm going to do it. At the end of the first segment. I think it's going to be better.
I like it.
Because we could never get to the rundown of what's on the program because you always jump in with something inane.
Well, I just did.
Exactly.
Well, you threw me for a loop.
Here's the cool part that happened. You had to ask nicely this time.
You really threw me. There's one of several things happened during that. First, I was like, wow, this is totally different. What's going on? Like, maybe you forgot. Like, what's going on? Are you that off your game right now? Or B, did I just sleepwalk my way through the first 5 or 6 minutes, which I figured was very likely? So, no, we've got a new thing. I like that there's a little electricity.
Yeah,
an immediacy to it.
I think it's going
to
be good. It's just we're hitting them hard right off the jump.
Bang. All right, let's do that. Do it again.
Play my intro music again, Mike.
We don't have that.
You can't do it. He puts his hands up. He's like, I can't do that. I'm not a wizard. Disastrous conditions in Rio. The people competing in the open water events, one Olympic rower literally said that she will be rowing through a river of crap for America. And that's not necessarily wrong. Untreated sewage is in the streets. Security's a major concern. The athletes say that the Olympic Village is uninhabitable. And yet, when these games kick off next week, most people watching on television might not have any idea. Joining us in the classroom this morning is John Frankel, a correspondent from HBO's Real Sport and a friend of everyone here at the Marist College Center for Sports Communication.
That's not true. It's not true.
I think he likes all of us.
He likes all of us. Well, technically, does he know you?
No, I wouldn't think so. I don't know why he would. We've never met.
So
he might know of me.
No, I don't doubt that.
It's very possible.
He is certainly a friend and a distinguished adjunct. What's the name of that? Distinguished Professional Adjunct in Sports Communication.
You created the name.
I create every name. Every name at the Center for Sports Communication is a figment of my own imagination.
HBO Real Sports did a 90-minute expose on the International Olympic Committee. A large part of that was about the conditions in Rio. We're going to talk to John Frankel about just the state of the Olympics in modern society and how millions and millions and millions of people around the world can enjoy this when it's literally, if you believe the HBO Real Sports account and some of the people they talk to, partially responsible for igniting war?
I mean, it seems as though, at the very least, and they spent some time, well, three of the correspondents spent time in three of the most recent sites of the Olympics where there certainly have been questionable human rights violations and expenditures and so forth. Russia, China, and now Rio. Of course, one person then got to go to Norway.
Guess which HBO correspondent went there?
Not the correspondent, but the namesake of the program. Brian, of course, picked the short straw on that one and got the best assignment.
Brian, of course, if he was looking for a location that has rejected the Olympics, could have gone about 3 hours north to Boston.
Yeah. He's like, look, we've got to go to the heart of this story. John, I want you in that sewage in Rio. Bernie, try to get arrested. I mean, there was a study in contrast, right? I talked to John when he was over in Rio, and he informed me that his crew just had all its equipment stolen. And I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. Bryant was probably at the Four Seasons, Norway. Look, it's his show. It's his show. When you're Bryant, you get to decide who's going to Sochi to live with the stray dogs. Right? And who's going to spend some time in a Chinese prison? And who's gonna spend some time in the land of the midnight sun? Would you do that? How would you do it?
Exactly the same way.
Brian's like, look, I've interviewed 20 presidents. I've done my time. This is my
not
show.
Interviewed 20 presidents. Yeah, I remember that hard hitting expose you did on Hubert Humphrey.
In all fairness, I didn't say American presidents.
Hubert Humphrey, of course, was a vice president. I was thinking of Herbert Hoover. That's who I was going for. Herbert Hoover was the – that was. I was trying in my head to think of who was the funniest president name of like the recent times. And I got my Huberts confused.
Yeah. I would like to interview a president.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Well, I'd like that. I don't think that's going to happen on the program.
What else are we talking about in this show today? We're talking about the NFL straight up lying about their youth football initiatives making the game safer. They claim that heads-up tackling, that heads-up initiative, was reducing concussions by 30%, yeah, injuries by 70%.
76%, they said.
It turns out they just made it up.
Turns out they – well, no. It's actually it's – I don't want to say it's worse or better. It just shows actually even more – I don't know, a lack of concern, perhaps, is the best way to put it. They use some numbers from a preliminary release that came from the agency, the research firm that they hired to commission the study, and it seems like a reputable firm they hired. It's not a it's not independent. It's not a university, but it is independent in some sense. They hired an agency to do the study. It's the same group that does research on injury statistics for the NCAA. So they work in this area. You know, there are better places probably to do this, but that's fine. That's normally how this stuff gets done. And they put out some preliminary results just, you know, on some of the pilot study, I suppose, they had done. And by the way, they shouldn't have released that in the first place. You don't release the preliminary, the pilot results, because that's all they are. They're not conclusive, and they're certainly not complete. The NFL went ahead and posted that and left it there, and so did USA Football, which is essentially the organization that oversaw or commissioned the study. The NFL funds it. And apparently those numbers didn't tell the whole story. When they finished the study, it was much, much less supportive of the positive impact of heads-up football. It seems as though there's only 45% reduction in overall injuries and no reduction in concussions. I mean, statistically insignificant either way. One was a little bit up, one's a little bit down, whether it's in-game or out-of-game. No change in concussions. The NFL never bothered to change the statistics on their website, nor did USA Football, which leads me to believe they never actually read the study. Like, they never – that's actually what I believe. I believe they never actually read the study.
Well, there was a quote that said that they asked their research firm, find us some positive data that we can promote, send it to us, and we'll post it. And it looks like that's what they
did. They're like, this is what we found on day four. I mean, they never read – this is how – and we'll get into this in the second hour – this is how little they actually care.
Well, exactly. They don't care.
They don't care.
This is not, by the way, not the first time that they have either made up, falsified, or cherry-picked data relating to the safety of football. This is not the first time.
They don't care. That's the problem. The problem is that they commissioned a study, and instead of actually caring about what the study said, as soon as someone fed them some numbers that work, they just posted it. That's how little they care. I don't even think we should give them credit for being mischievous and making up false data. They just don't care. They don't care.
The real question, though, is does anybody care? I mean, I would imagine players care to a certain extent. You're seeing them retire earlier. You're seeing them take, you know, some of them at least this taking extra precautions. But the NFL, I don't think anybody really cares.
Well, we did a study on this 3 years ago with the Marist poll, which actually aired on Real Sports to bring us full circle. And at that point, parents increasingly did care about youth football.
Yes.
And that's really what this is getting at, because this was focused on youth football.
And youth football participation is down from 3 million in 2010 to 2.2 million this year, and that's a huge drop
in
a short amount of time.
So we already saw the cracks in the foundation a few years ago. That parents were increasingly, particularly parents of on the coasts, particularly parents that make over $50,000 a year, so parents of more affluence. I'm sure if we got into a higher stratosphere, we'd find even more kind of disparate numbers. So I think parents do care. Do they care about the NFL players? Probably not yet. Probably not yet. I mean, because they consider those people kind of mercenaries for hire. But we'll get into that in the second hour. But it was shocking that they went this route.
And as much as this is, you know, big NFL news, the real story is that Aaron Rodgers' brother is in the final two on The Bachelor. And Aaron Rodgers finally broke his silence about his brother being on The Bachelor.
Trouble in
paradise. Because Aaron Rodgers and his brother don't have the closest relationship. Nope. And it came up on the show, and that forced Aaron Rodgers to respond. And this is huge news. This is important.
Well, look, the Packers are heading into camp. He's supposed to be 100% focused on football, and now he's dealing with this.
Don't be shy about putting your phone on mute during a live broadcast.
Well, I need to know if someone liked a text I put out. So I guess I could just look at it.
Can you do that?
He meant tweet.
Okay.
Tweet text.
I'm sorry, tweet.
So phones, and it looks like you have an iPhone there. There's a little button on the side. If you flick it, that button then silences your phone, but alerts you to messages via a vibration. You should try it. It's interesting.
You know what? I'm dealing with a lot of issues right now. We've got a lot going on.
Okay. Welcome to the part of the show where Keith Strother tells you how hard his life is.
Finally you asked.
Sarcasm. That was sarcasm. I mean, also, how come you can't be on time?
You know why I can't be on time? First of all, I am on time. We got on the air on time. I fixed the studio issues. Excuse me. You're welcome. I worked on your stupid trip to Alabama so you can have a vanity.
Is that a done deal?
It's getting pretty close.
100% tickets booked?
There's no such thing as 100%.
A little more work needed.
I'm setting you two up so you can go have your Jim Beams on a patio out in Tuscaloosa.
You do realize that Jim Beam is, of course, from Tennessee.
That's right.
Not from Alabama. These are two totally different states.
That's fine. Then you won't have any. All right? So I'm setting that up for you so you can go watch the Iron Bowl. I'm working on you getting to Tampa to watch a championship game. I got Iron Eagle. Breaking news, by the way, September 27th on campus. Iron Eagle will be speaking here. I'll be interviewing him. If that's not must-see, there is nothing. All right? That is both political conventions wrapped up into one. Right here, location on campus to be determined, but an intimate evening with Keith Strother and Iron Eagle on campus, September 27th, Tuesday night.
I like how you put your name first.
And then compared it to both party conventions.
Sure.
Will there be a balloon drop at the end?
that actually is a great idea. That's a great idea.
Of course it is. I'm an idea man.
All right. We got to go to break because I know John's coming on soon.
But you had a perfect opportunity to...
I know John's going
kayaking. Complain a little more.
All right. So here's what's happening. John can wait. All right, so here's what's happening. So I got my wife is out of town. I was in San Francisco last week. All right. The week before that, my wife's in Toronto. That was no picnic. All right. I was in San Francisco. I come home. I come back to do the show. My mom's in New York. I got to hustle down there, deal with that stuff. All right. Then I come back here, try to get a couple days of work in. My mom comes a couple nights ago up to Beacon. I take care of that. Andra, by the way, is in Aspen at some security forum. We'll find out if that's true. I'm sure she's just hanging out with John. We'll ask that. Now we're getting personal, and I didn't need to go there. I didn't intend for this to turn into that ugliness.
Just digging your own grave.
Now we've made a very uncomfortable interview. We've made for a very uncomfortable next segment. Didn't have to happen. All right? And now I got to go back down to the city because my mom's still down there, and I got these two kids sitting in the foyer here who are probably beating the crap out of each other.
Point of order for Child Protective Services. They are his kids. They're not random children.
I bought them like $80 of food at Dunkin' Donuts. I'm probably going to have to go get an angioplasty by the time this thing is over. So that's why I'm late, all right? You guys wake up, roll out of your waterbeds, and you know, take a swig of whatever's next to you, and walk on in. All right? It's not so easy for me.
Class is in session. Your weekly smart look at sports continues after this. Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. I'm Jeff, he's Keith. This broadcast of The Classroom featuring Mike Wallace, an intern of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication. Don't forget that you can like us on Facebook, search for ESPN The Classroom, follow us on Twitter at ESPN_classroom, and join the now legions of fans are listening to archived versions of this show, our podcast available on iTunes. Again, ESPN The Classroom.
And I'll just, to all of you listeners out there who are downloading and enjoying the program in its second life, thanks for doing your part. The rest of you, come on now. I mean, what? Right? I mean, this is like the election. We all have to do our part. Those of you that just like I can't remember which politician it was who said it. I should be paying more attention. Whoever said, "Hey, those of you that have families, husbands, wives, they can take care of themselves. 8-year-olds can use microwaves, and 8-year-olds can teach 4-year-olds how to use microwaves." I blistered that. My point is, we need to tell the listeners that they should be downloading more programs. Yes, we're getting good download numbers. Yes, we're starting to get noticed by the big boys. Yes, we understand Mike and Mike's starting to feel the heat, right? We understand that.
Podcast section of iTunes, search for ESPN, The Classroom. Right, we're on the eve of the Rio Olympics, and we've talked about this a lot on the program, sometimes flippantly, like when a foot washes up on the shores of Copacabana Beach at the beach volleyball venue. But this thing's really, it's an unmitigated disaster. It feels like every Olympics is an unmitigated disaster to some point when you're 7 days out from the Olympics. But Keith Strother, this one feels like especially so.
I'm sorry, I was texting.
I know.
Why do you do that? Why do you do
that? For this moment right here.
So could you repeat the question, please?
Rio, disaster, question mark?
I mean, John will give us a much better, clear sense of that. It certainly seems that way, right? It certainly seems as if there are, you know, usually in these games, there tends to be one crack in the foundation, to use that analogy for the second time in the show. Everything seems to be going wrong, right? Whether it's the Russian delegation now maybe going, you know, a few people going.
Weightlifters are now out. Track and field's out. Weightlifters
are now out. Let's be quite honest. If there's someone taking steroids, it's the weightlifters. I mean, let's not. That's just it. That is the sport that steroids were made for. So you've got that. And Putin even said, well, then the medals don't count anymore because we weren't there, which is what I would say, by the way. If I weren't at some place, I'd be like, well, that party sucks.
Feel like you got a lot of Vladimir Putin in you?
Yeah, we got a lot in common. The only thing we have in common is our diminutive size. That's pretty much it.
HBO's Real Sports did an expose on not just Rio, but the IOC and the entire place of the Olympics in modern society. It is available on HBO Go, on demand. Yep. You can still catch it.
And an entire program dedicated just to this singular topic, which is not their normal. In fact, Bryant made that point at the start of the program. They normally do 15, 20-minute segments. Occasionally, you'll see them do a double segment, as they did for the hunting in the big game hunting story they did a while back. But generally speaking, they tend to go, you know, a variety of topics. This was dedicated solely to looking at the IOC, which happened, you know, really on the eve of the opening of this major event. And NBC is going to have a real challenge on their hands to try to paint this as anything other than what a lot of people think it is.
One of the four journalists who put together that Real Sports piece is our guest in the classroom this morning, John Frankel, a correspondent for HBO's Real Sports and a great friend of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication, joining us live from beautiful Aspen, yeah, Colorado. Good morning, John.
You guys just hung me out to dry.
I'm sorry. Does your wife not know you're there?
I'm toiling. I've got dirt up to my elbows. I've got blisters on my hands.
Well,
that was another politician's quote, wasn't it?
Yeah,
somebody doesn't have blisters on their hands.
You're looking for corruption amongst athletics in the Aspen Little League, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, your line would have been to borrow from Obama, which would have been, you know, don't boo, download.
Mm.
Oh, we do get a lot of booing, though. We thrive off the booing to a certain extent.
I took particular offense to that line because why can't I do both?
You don't want to do both.
I'm not
a man of action. You just want to boo and have everybody be happy with that.
Well, look, I took a political science class in college, and I like how I won. I took a political science class in college. At which point I realized I wasn't going to be a government.
Is that
major.
Where you learned about the importance of voting?
Well, I found out what a senator does. I found out pointless to call a senator to ask them fix a pothole on your street. They can't do anything. But I also learned this: you have a much better shot of getting hit by lightning like multiple times than having your single vote affect the outcome of a national election.
Tell that to the 500 people in Florida in 2000.
I'm not talking to them. And by the way, lightning capital of the world, so yeah, I will talk to them. Stay inside. Don't vote. I'm sorry. That was a terrible thing.
You probably also have, well, I'm exaggerating slightly, but I can bring this back home for you. You probably have a better chance of getting struck by lightning than getting Zika.
Hmm.
That was good. Because one of the problems, this is how big of a disaster these Olympics are in Rio. There is a mosquito-borne virus running rampant through South America, and it's like concern number five.
John, yeah. you spent some time in Rio. It seemed perilous at best. How bad is it on the ground there? When you're there, I mean, you went to some of the low spots. How bad is it, and what's the tenor like actually on the ground there?
The barbecue is terrific, Keith. Brazilian barbecue. Listen,
steakhouse.
There's no question it's bad. I mean, here's example one, which is, if you want to talk about crime, which also seems to be falling very low on the list of issues for people, but our camera crew didn't make it from the airport to the hotel without getting robbed. A very professional job, as seen by security street cameras later when they went to the police precinct to report. I mean, it was a real professional job. They had their tires slashed at one stoplight, so a few stoplights later, the the driver said, you know, I got a flat. And the guys got out to help him fix it.
Not a good sign.
Before they knew it, boom, camera gone, computer gone, passport's gone. So that's an issue for a lot of people. I was there prior to the World Cup in 2014, and there were issues and concerns about crime just in general in Rio, like any big city, but there in particular because of the favelas and the drug lords that run those slum areas. And, you know, you feel comfortable walking to dinner, but people say, hey, be on your toes. And they say the situation has gotten worse since then, and there have been Olympic athletes who have been robbed and mugged and at gunpoint. So that's one issue. Zika is obviously an issue to contend with. We talk about it in our piece. And does Brazil own Zika? No, obviously not. But
Zika belongs to us all.
It belongs to us all, but the belief is, and this says that it was born there, and in large part due to the flowing sewage and the standing water that is part of everyday life in Rio, particularly in the favelas. And you're talking about a city of 7 million people, but when you see these, as you see in our story, you see these waterfalls of raw sewage. And, it literally, you know, walk into your worst-smelling, you know, port-a-john, and, you know, that's what you're talking about people living in every single day. So that's, you know, that's giving birth to Zika, and it is a problem. So I exaggerate when I say that you have, you know, a better chance of getting struck by lightning. It is a concern. Is it going to happen to everybody? Certainly not. Then, of course, there's the sewage and where that's all going, which is into the bays and the open water that 40 different competitions are going to take place in. And so all these athletes are having to contend with that. Now you can say, okay, how big a deal is it for the people who are rowing? Well, okay, they get splashed and it gets on their hands and you can clean that. But we interviewed a couple sailors, a team from Portugal, and these guys talk about the actual art of sailing and that they literally put these ropes right into their mouth as they're sailing and racing. And so that's an issue for a lot of people. I mean, it's disgusting. It really is. You go in the open water and you just see anything you can. It's like going on Monty Hall and let's make a deal. Anything you think you could carry in a garbage bag is in the water.
I like the dated reference, by the way. I got it.
Thank you.
By the way, the triathletes don't have it so good either, because I mean, you've done triathlons. You swallow whatever's in that water. I mean, so
yeah.
you're gonna be ingesting that raw sewage. And there was a part during the story where you were standing on top of some pipes where sewage was literally just flowing right into the water, and it's a very visceral kind of display. And this is a two-part question. I'm going to break the journalistic code, which is never ask a two-part question. First off, seeing what you saw, do you think that the athletes, when they arrive, some of them might say, I'm not getting in that? Do you think there will be a point of revolt during the games? Or are they so nationalistic that they're just going to go through with it? Which seems, I've talked to some Olympians who are like, oh, no, I would do it for sure. I'd definitely go. That's the first part. And secondly, you were talking with people who were outspoken and trying to, voice some concerns about what's about to happen. What was the general feeling you got from the people who were trying to alert the government, the public, that this thing isn't safe?
Well, we interviewed the mayor of Rio, and he put a great deal of spin on everything, as any politician would. So, you know, when you would say, okay, here's what's happening because of the spending on the Olympics, you are failing in everyday public services, in your health clinics and your hospitals. And he would say, oh, well, those aren't city hospitals. Those are state hospitals. That's the state of Rio hospital. You know, so it's still a public hospital, but it's not his city hospital.
That's like the German, that's like the German 1972 excuse. Like, oh, those are the Bavarian capital. We can't.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's just not taking responsibility in any way. If you want to talk about how hard it was to get people to speak out against the Olympics, I mean, we had that professor from one of the colleges in the city. He was very forthcoming. But the gentleman who received a great deal of publicity because he was first hired by the Associated Press to do the testing of the water, Mr. Spilkey, the AP had to go far beyond the limits of Rio to find somebody who could basically be an independent body to study the water, because everybody else had contracts and was involved with the government and wouldn't do it and couldn't do it from a legitimate standpoint. You know, there was no way they were going to give you an unbiased, clean, if you will, pardon the pun, interpretation and evaluation of the water. He was down in one of the southern states of Brazil. To address your first question, which I don't remember. No, I got it. To address your first question about athletes and their willingness to participate and will they get there and say, you know, no mas, I don't think that's the case, because well above 90% of the athletes who participate in the Olympics only go one time. And so this is their moment. They've worked, if not just for the last 4 years, they've worked, you know, for the last 16 years at trying to get there. And so I don't even think it's a feeling of nationalism and waving the flag. I think it's just, wow, I'm here. I'm an Olympian. I'm going to do this. And I think we'd all be that way. The other thing is that I spoke to some American athletes about their willingness to participate, and they were triathletes. And, you know, their feeling was, and this isn't to take the legs out from under our story by any means, but their feeling is, look, we swim in water all the time that a lot of people wouldn't choose to swim in. It's not fresh, open water lake swimming. And we in America may be a little bit more insulated from the rest of the, you know, the conditions that the rest of the world has to deal with, just because our society is cleaner in a lot of ways. And so they say, look, it is what it is. We've swam in dirty water before. We'll swim in this, and we'll take all the precautions we can. I think it might interrupt, if not deter somebody from participating altogether, it might deter those some athletes from their normal training routine and getting used to the local facilities, so they won't train in the water.
So you might want to maybe you might want to, you know, even work your way up to it, like start swimming in like New York City pools first, then work your way down.
Wow!
I'm sorry. Work your way down to like, you know what? Go to a water park next,
right?
Something like that.
Right.
So you know that kind of thing. Because I just assume that's 50% urine. That's kind of a given.
We're talking with John Frankel, a correspondent for HBO's Real Sports, about the Rio Olympics. The human rights violations, the public health violations, all of that that's going on, it's becoming, I think, more widely reported as the games approach. I still think a lot of people either are willfully ignorant or just plain ignorant of it. How much will this impact, when the games kick off, the spectacle that most people see when they tune in to watch?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head right there when you said the spectacle. That's what a lot of people are tuning into and for. I mean, how many people do you know watch every event or even watch every day in and day out of the Olympics? You know, they watch some highlights, they watch the big moment, if Michael Phelps is going to do this or do that, or the gymnastics moment when it's, you know, the team competition. But what does almost everybody say they watch? The opening ceremonies. And that's the spectacle. And you look at our story, and you certainly can recall from your own memories all the great opening shows, the lighting of the torch and you know, thousands of athletes marching in, and you get to see what their team uniform is. And, you know, we showed the footage from China, and it's amazing. And this is not to knock. I know a lot of people at NBC, and they do a really nice job of putting on a great television show. And you got to remember, they are partners with the Olympics, with the IOC. That's, you know, so are they going to show you the 80,000 people that were removed from favelas and to make way for roads that lead to the Olympic Park? Are they going to show you the raw sewage that's flowing down through the favelas? I don't think so. Are they going to be out there showing you the sanitation trucks that, you know, had to clean out the bay? I don't think so, which is fine. That's their prerogative. That's the whole question of, are they journalists in this case, or are they just, you know, Are they just televising a sporting event? And the human rights issues, you know, that's a whole other question to ask. I think we frame it as the IOC, because of its charter, has a responsibility and has turned its back on that responsibility by awarding the games to places like Russia, like Beijing, and again in Rio, and sort of saying, well, we didn't necessarily make these promises. You know, the organizers, the local organizers said they would do A, B, and C. But they require so much of that. They stipulate what they want, and then they know what's going to take place. So you can ask yourself, you can argue it both ways. Should the IOC be sitting there and saying, we're not giving the games to China until they figure out how to deal with people properly? We're not going to give the games to Rio until they figure out how to either, you know, if not move people out of favelas to homes that they would like to be in. Many of the people like living in the favelas because they've been there for generations. But do they have a responsibility to say to Rio, look, here are some marker points that we're going to award the games to you in 2009, but if by 2011 you haven't cleaned up X percentage of the sewage, you're going to lose the games. And if by 2013 you're not here and by 2015 you're not there, you know, there should be real markers along the way. But you could say to yourself, why does the IOC have a responsibility? They didn't put a gun to anybody's head. They didn't tell Rio they had to host the games.
Well, now, interesting, not the gun to someone's head, but you visited a few sites, or your team visited a few sites. Of course, Brian seemed to visit the nicest of the four sites. I wonder if that was...
You're not the only one who noticed that.
It seemed very, very odd that Bernie's in jail and David Scott's being followed by the Chinese authorities, and you're hovering over raw sewage, and Brian's at the Four Seasons in Norway. Seems like a vacation. But that, you know, like, it's his show. I said that. Wouldn't you do the same thing? Of course you would, right?
Of course.
That's exactly right. That's the way we do it. Yes. That's why I'm sending intern Mike Wallace down to someplace very ugly, into the slums, and I'm going to be up in the mountains. No, but so you visited. You visited a few spots. All of them, or both of the two that had the Olympics previously, seemed to have been worse for the wear, whether it was Beijing, these unused facilities. Certainly Sochi has not done well in the wake of the Olympics. I don't think we even have to question whether Brazil will look back and wonder if this was a good idea or not. Do you think, though, kind of looking forward in the culmination of this story, that this might be kind of the true beginning of the end of the Olympics? And this is something we've postulated for quite some time, that as countries no longer want to say it, you know, want to host the games, you say, you know, they didn't put a gun to their head. Well, pretty soon they're going to have to, because no one wants these things anymore, as Brian pointed out in Norway. Do you think these Rio games, from what you saw, could be the beginning of the end?
Well, I'd like to think that, you know, is this the watershed moment? I'd like to think that the corruption scandal and investigation into FIFA would make them turn over a new leaf. Is it? I don't know. Have we seen significant change so far? Have we seen FIFA pull the games, you know, the World Cup from Qatar? I think the IOC is going to have to look long and hard. And even if they don't want to look at themselves, they may be forced to, because nobody else is going to bid for the games. And so they may be left with only countries like China or Kazakhstan bidding for, you know, the 2022 games.
You need to get out of your job by then, because I'm going to tell you, you don't want to be in Kazakhstan. I don't think you come back.
Well, if, you know, fortunately they already awarded the games, you know, to Beijing for them. But yeah, those are the two countries that were left on the table. And so even if they don't want to, you know, look at themselves in the mirror, they may be forced to, because I really do think that the Olympics now come with a warning label of buyer beware. And that to me is also really one of the lingering questions, which is why do any of these cities, countries need the incentive of the Olympics? Why can't they do this on their own? They probably spent much more money trying to accommodate the IOC and the Olympic Games than if they'd simply said, let's clean up the sewage. Or, you know what, we need new transportation lines to help the people that live 2 hours outside of downtown Rio get to their jobs faster. Let's do it because we want to do it. And up until the recession, Brazil was a wealthy country. So I don't understand when the IOC comes in and says, we'll make you better, and local politicians buy into it, when they can say, we can make ourselves better. We don't need you. In fact, you make us worse. And I think that will be the lasting legacy, rather than this idea of transformation. I think the world is slowly waking up and taking notice that this is a farce. And so is the whole idea of the games. People are cheating. People aren't going. People are coming as individuals, you know, instead of coming under national flags. So then the question begs, why do we even need all these Olympic committees? You know?
Well, it's the myth of sports everywhere. The NFL promises the same thing when they bring a team to town, obviously at a much smaller scale and without the political ramifications. One final question before we let you go. We know there's a kayak with your name on it right now. Very important work assignment. My wife was out in Aspen for the last few days, and you can tell me the truth. Did she get into any trouble while she was out there?
There was an article in the paper today. It said, woman from out of town.
That's her.
You know, one woman from out of town. That was it. And it said, Poughkeepsie connection, Marist connection.
Sure. Oh, now I'm indicted.
But I think if you read the small print, everybody let her off the hook because it said getting away from grizzly family back east.
Oh, so she indicted us. Well, In all fairness, that's a good defense. I'd buy into that. So she
I'm
claimed,
just sorry you're not. I just sorry you're not carrying her bags and you're not, you know, out here with her.
I tried to get out there. Apparently, she saw a preview of Bourne Identity, or the new Jason Bourne film. They did a little preview, and then they were with this. You know, the former head of the CIA the other night. I don't know. There's some kind of. She told me there's a security form going out there.
Yes, there's a security form.
Yeah, that's what she was at.
I know people who went, actually.
Yeah, she was there. Yeah. Allegedly. So she was there.
I don't know that they're doing such a good job because I didn't get all the details, but there was apparently at some campsite out here a hostage situation. I kid you not.
Well, it's because all these people were out watching the Bourne film. And
you know, I mean, who's. Isn't somebody going to tackle the Bears?
I'm sure Aspen has a real robust police force. I'm sure.
Hey.
Making sure the billionaires don't fight with the millionaires. All right. John, thank you very much for coming. And you're coming up to do a coin flip sometime this season, correct?
That's correct. I've got a two-headed side coin.
Perfect. And, and Jeff calls the football games, and he'd like to secure an exclusive interview.
Yeah, come to halftime.
Don't you want me to be the sideline reporter?
Sure.
Oh, that's true.
Do the whole game.
That's true. We'll throw it down to the high line. Still losing by 40 here. Morale is low.
John Fragle, correspondent for HBO's Real Sports, the guest in the classroom this morning. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Really fun. Appreciate you giving us a nod.
Bye. What? All right. Seems like Andre got in a little trouble out there. A
hostage situation. I tell you what. I have been grossly misinformed about Aspen. Turns out it's a rough town.
That is the richest town.
I know.
It is ridiculous. Like, it makes Vail feel, feel like it's a third world nation. It is out of control. I think you actually have to have papers to get into Aspen.
Like, we got to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about why the world needs the Olympics, because I was thinking about this during that discussion. I'm not excited for the Olympics. Like, I'll watch it a little.
In all fairness, we don't get excited about a lot.
It's true. but that's not true. That's like, there are true. Big sporting events, and I'm like, I'm excited to watch this. I want to watch this.
You're excited about the basketball tournament. You're more excited about the basketball tournament.
Absolutely, I am.
Are we going? You want to go?
Tuesday?
Yeah, you want to go Tuesday? I got to tell my guy.
Let's work it out. I can go.
I could also get us tickets to World Team Tennis.
I'll do that, too.
You know, I mean,
I've never said no to a free ticket.
Who's your love interest in tennis?
What do you mean?
You have a thing for one of the female tennis players.
I mean, I have that.
Is it Wozniacki?
I do like Caroline Wozniacki.
Her team's playing Monday night.
Oh, let's go there. Let's go there.
You want to do it?
Well, why not?
I mean, I think we can get to the interview room.
Perfect. One step closer. It all begins now.
Caroline, this is more of a personal question.
It all begins.
Do you like Thai?
More of the classroom ahead. We're back after this on Fox 12 2097.3 ESPN Radio. The Olympics in Rio de Janeiro start next. week. And we just spoke with John Frankel of HBO's Real Sports, who has been on the ground in Rio in the lead-up to these games, about all of the problems that they're having. We didn't even get to all of them. We just briefly touched on security. The police in Rio have said, quote, "We don't think we can protect you if you come to Rio." The president, by the way, is being impeached. Dilma Rousseff is stepped down. She's out of office right now as the impeachment proceedings play out.
That's great.
The mayor of Rio is corrupt. John referenced that a little bit about the spin that he was giving. He's bought and paid for by the IOC. Sewage in the water. We got the Zika virus. Body parts are washing up on Copacabana Beach. People are being forcibly evicted from their homes. Putting all of that aside. Take all that, move it aside.
How did you like to play, Mrs. Lincoln?
Exactly. Exactly. But why? I feel like the Olympics aren't necessarily fit or important in 2016.
I think they aren't in the same regard that they used to be.
Right. I mean, modern times have passed the Olympics by.
Yes. Because we now have global world championships in almost every sport. Professional sports leagues, because of largely because of travel, geopolitics, the fall of certain political empires. I mean, now we have Russians playing in the NHL. We don't need some of the championships that we used to have. I mean, the NBA is a global professional basketball league. We don't need to know if the Argentinians are better than the
Americans.
Exactly.
The Olympics were great when you had your team and you knew all about your team, and they went to this thing with a bunch of other teams that you've never heard of, and you didn't know what they had, and you would see it, and it'd be like, this is the best of the best, the best in the world. Now, the best in the world play against each other day in and day out. And the proliferation of media and access, you can now watch, if you want to watch synchronized swimming at the highest level, you can do it at any moment from seven devices in your pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's little mystique around someone like Usain Bolt, who you can watch at any time, and you've seen compete against all the American athletes all throughout the course of his career. There's nothing secretive about it. A lot of them trained together. To me, a lot of this started to change when you started to have American coaches going over and coaching, you know, teams from other countries. I think when Dale Harris was coaching the Chinese basketball team, I'm like, he was the Rockets coach.
This has always gotten me, not just about the Olympics, but about international sport. And this is kind of off topic, but it's something that I do. How is it that national teams have coaches from other countries?
I don't understand that. And because the argument that this is supposed to be the highest regard of nationalism, you're doing this solely for country. It almost acts, I know we've been talking about treason a lot this week, but it almost feels treasonous where you have an American coach saying, you know what I really want to do? I want to make sure the Chinese win.
Well, it works the other way. I mean, look at the coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team, Jurgen Klinsmann, German.
Yes. We're fine with – well, does he not have an American citizenship?
I don't know. No. I don't know what passport he has, but he's German.
Yeah. It does seem to really defy the whole ethos of the idea. I mean, at some point, you've almost gotten to the point that you say, look, let's just make it one giant sporting event. Take away the countries. Let's make teams. Like Color Wars.
That's sort of what it's become. It stopped being about nationalism and about America. I mean, just look at – let's keep sticking with the U.S. men's national team. You can play for a country if you have a small connection to it. Like if your great-grandfather
was born in one country. Athens hosted, everyone was Greek. Right. Like literally everyone was Greek.
Half of the U.S. men's national team, it might be less than half, but they're from another country.
Yes.
They just have a tie to America. They can get them an American passport. So they play for America because they're not good enough to play for Germany.
Yes, there's a giant draft going on, right? And we're all picking athletes and making teams and then giving them country names.
So if the Olympics and international sports aren't about nationalism anymore, if they're not about access to events that we don't have access to at any other time, if they're not about being the most important and most prestigious and most valuable championship in a given sport, why do they exist?
Well, there's an industry around them. It's hard to unravel.
Well, I mean, I understand the IOC wants them to exist because without them, the IOC does not enrich themselves.
Yes, I mean, the IOC is as simply a parent organization that helps society through sport is not a whole lot. So why should they exist?
Yes, that's a great question. Why should the Olympics exist?
I suppose if the Olympics, and I think they pointed this out on Real Sport, that we shouldn't be cynical to the idea that sport can help society become better.
I agree.
Can help the world to become better.
I agree.
There is an enormous power that comes with sport if used the correct way to bring people from diverse backgrounds together, to help people to learn important lessons about life, winning, losing. I mean, there are things that we can learn both in competing and in watching sport. Mm-hmm. And the Olympics had, I suppose, a higher calling of helping cities to better themselves and all of that. And if you go back to the original charter of the Olympics, the original charter of the Olympics always had a very elitist, colonial feel to it, I suppose. And this was the idea that certain elites would take sport and teach them how to do things the correct way. And so there probably are dated notions of the Olympic Games in general that probably don't fit the modern sensibilities of today's world. But you could make the argument that if the Olympics were actually – you know, something that went into an area and helped it better itself, as John pointed out, they don't need the Olympics to actually make themselves better.
If they were a true nonprofit organization, yeah. I mean, they are technically a nonprofit organization, but if they actually did kind of, you know, global outreach work, sure. But they're obviously not going to do that. I mean, the IOC in the HBO Real Sports documentary, which, again, you can catch on HBO Go on demand. You can find it if you're a subscriber. The IOC is just awful. I mean, they're just awful.
And remember we had the argument of who's worse, the IOC versus
or FIFA, who are also just awful.
But another good point John made, you know, they haven't pulled the World Cup from Qatar, have they?
No. No.
And that was – everyone assumed, oh, well, they'll pull it for sure.
I mean, I still think they will, but it's –
but they haven't.
Let me put it this way. It's still so far away.
But they understand that it is essentially – they're essentially running a slave trade to make this happen.
Yeah, but
we know that.
No,
and that's not going to change.
The problem is, I think it's so far away, the World Cup in Qatar, that the global community's outreach, they still have other things to worry about right now that they can't focus
like
on that yet. right. So
this.
I think once it gets closer and the spotlight is now on Qatar and what's going on there.
But I guess the point is this.
Because what's happening in Qatar makes what's happening in Rio look like a banquet. like Qatar is they are killing slaves to build soccer stadiums in the desert.
It feels like
Egypt.
Yes, it did. It feels like Egypt. Right. By the way, we took a trip to the Met. We were down in the city,
the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Yes,
love the Met.
I took the
love
kids.
The
we
Met.
Went to the kids. Went to
you
the
know,
Met.
You know the Met.
What?
Can be free. You don't have to pay. You can walk right in.
Is this like the idea where you don't have to stop when the cops are pulling
no,
you over?
No, that you actually do have to do.
Oh.
The Met is open to the public. They ask you for a suggested donation.
Why did I give them money?
Because they make it seem like you have to pay, but you don't.
So what if I was like, no, thank you?
Exactly. You can walk right in. They put on the sign like $25, whatever they put as a suggested donation. If you give them $1, they'll let you in. If you give them no money, they'll let you in.
What if I give them $1,000?
You can do that too. I believe that might even get you invited to a special dinner at the Met.
Huh. So I don't have to. But see, I would never. You don't want to be that person.
No, you don't. You don't. But I like to go in there and I like to give them like $5. Especially if you go to the Met a lot. If you go to the Met like once every 10 years
that?
Or whatever, pay. Well, there was a time where I would go a lot.
What do you? Why a lot?
Because it's huge and interesting.
You think the Sphinx is going to move?
Because, listen, you can't learn about medieval weaponry all in one day.
The medieval, that's a serious room. We got to that one later in the trip. I was like, oh, boy, gold mine.
But here's the thing with the Met. They don't need your money. They don't need your money.
Let's send it right here to the ESPN, the classroom.
No, there
we need your money.
There are so many.
Can't feed ourselves down there in Tuscaloosa.
There are so many charities and causes that need your money more than the Met.
Like the Marist College Center for Sports Communication, also a nonprofit. Home with a Lifetime Excellence in Sports Communication Award. So the whole time I was there, I kept in my head when I got into the Egyptian area, which is a great area.
Agree. Love
it.
Might
be my favorite.
Mine's the medieval weaponry, but the Egyptian area is close behind.
You know, the kids, you know, Sloan particularly, one, my 8-year-old, he really wanted to go for the Greek and Romans.
Okay. That's a good
area.
Because
I studied that a lot in school.
Fair.
And so, and I love the part where they're like, they're not sure if it's Greek or Roman.
Impressive that you've got, by the way, an 8-year-old that's interested in that.
Oh yeah, and so we were really interested in all that, and we of course built a model of Pompeii for a class project.
So interesting.
We're
Pompeii,
on that.
Of course, I mean, Italy. Pre-Roman Empire, I believe, wasn't it?
Was it city by intern? Mike Wallace?
Oh, because Mike Wallace is going to know that.
Well, you were in Florence.
Yeah, it's pre-Roman Empire.
I thought so. Pompeii, one of the most fascinating incidents of all time, in my opinion. I am fascinated by Pompeii.
Well, we did a whole big project on it. Mm-hmm. Why are you so fascinated on it?
The way it's been preserved. Yeah.
You know what we did?
Pompeii is probably, if you think about it, the best preserved, oldest event that's ever occurred.
Interesting. And by the way, there were sporting facilities in ancient Pompeii.
Yeah, I believe it.
That was in our model that we built. It was a diorama. It was very, very well done. I may have contributed a little bit to that. But that's A. But B, one thing, the only thing we didn't include in our, you know, absolutely to scale portrayal, the brothels. did not put
How
them in there.
Forget those.
Yeah. That was common. It's the world's oldest profession.
Uh-huh. It's history. You're censoring history.
This is why you got a B.
Oh, yeah. We didn't get a B. But I'm telling you, I didn't know, because you had to do like a model representation. I didn't know what that would be.
Of a brothel?
Yes.
Fair. Fair. I can see you walking off slippery slope in an elementary school.
They don't sell those at Michael's. Let me see. Am I right?
It's slippery slope. I agree with you.
And, you know, I wasn't going to be there to do the presentation with him, kind of help him dig himself out of that. So, of course, I wouldn't be the best person to dig myself out of that either. Once I started talking, I was like, well, these are the brothels. Mr. Strother, what's a brothel? Well.
And as we discussed off air, you would tell them in rich, gory detail what that is.
Yeah, I just can't stop. I can't help it. First of all, I'm an educator at heart. That's A. B, I can't help myself. Once I get going, I get going. So let's get back to and tie this, put a bow around this topic. Do we still need the Olympics? No. I think resoundingly no. I think what's going to be more interesting is, because this will be really the arbiter of that decision of whether or not we keep the Olympics in the long term, is whether or not we actually enjoy these Olympics. And that's an interesting question. I am not sure. I don't know what the ratings will be like. People have suggested they'll be good because the time difference isn't all that severe.
It's also a good time of year for sports. There's not a lot of sports.
Yeah, well, that yeah. I mean, that's always true for the Olympics, unless they're in the Southern Hemisphere. I mean, well, actually,
which
I take that back,
yeah,
unless they're in Australia.
Right.
So, but whether or not Americans rally behind these games, it'll be very interesting. Look, there's other stuff going on. I understand the Olympics. There's a political campaign that's running. That's going to take a lot of attention away. So I'll be interested. I actually think it may not. I'm not so sure they're going to do well this time.
We got to take a break. A second hour of the classroom coming up after this on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. It's the second hour of the classroom. Your weekly smart look at sports continues live from the Marist College Center for Sports Communication in Poughkeepsie. I'm Jeff Brault alongside Dr. Keith Stroller. He runs this place. And Mike Wallace is a student here at Marist mm-hmm. College helping produce this program. Great first hour about the Rio Olympics. Now let's shift gears to
One question on the real sports story covering all these games. Take Bryant's trip out. Bryant Gumbel got to go to Norway.
Oslo, Norway, yes. which seems very nice, by the way.
That Scandinavian, that's
high on my list. Yeah. Stockholm, Sweden is actually very high on my list of
places. Very clean, as far as I can tell. So I want to go in the summer where it's light all the time.
I thought it was the winter where it's light all the time.
Why would it be the winter? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't
know. It's
the
Northern Hemisphere.
I don't know.
How is that possible? Do you know how the sun works?
No. Well, I know the sun revolves around the Earth.
But you understand.
Which is flat.
But you understand that the Earth tilts on an axis, and so when we are in our winter, I mean in our summer, we're getting longer days, and our winter, we're getting shorter days. You understand that in the Northern Hemisphere. Southern Hemisphere, it's reversed.
What are you talking about? You talking about the vernal equinox?
But you understand.
Yes!
We're in the same hemisphere as you know, the Northern Hemisphere. We're in the same part of the globe as the Scandinavia.
Yeah.
All right? So our days are longer in the summer. Further north you go... The further north you go, the longer those days get. Like in Alaska.
Turn his mic off. Turn it off.
All right. I read whatever Wikipedia page you're on.
The most sunlight in the Northern Hemisphere starts June 20th.
Yes,
that's summer still.
The
solstice.
First day of summer.
Summer equinox. Yeah. All right. And so, but
it's pronounced.
How long?
It's pronounced equinox.
Well, that's the way you pronounce it.
And that's the way everyone.
In Scandinavia, they don't.
That's the way it is pronounced.
They pronounce it equinox.
They don't do that.
It's also I believe, a vehicle, a Chevy vehicle.
Yeah, also pronounced Equinox. Yeah.
Equinox.
Both pronounced the same way.
Give us during the longest days of the year in Oslo. Can you give me an amount of daylight we're going to get on that? If we go right at the peak of the season, I want to know what we're getting. I'm hoping like for 18, 19 hour days.
It might be. I know there's a, in Alaska.
Sure.
Anchorage.
The midnight
gets,
sun.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. They get
almost 24
hours.
Yeah. But now
19 hours of sunshine.
That's a lot. 19 hours.
Man. I don't think I'd want that. I don't think I'd
want
that.
Now, I've been up in like in the Canadian Rockies during the summer season, and you really, you know, you're out at dinner at like 10 o'clock, and it's just bright light out there.
I don't want that. I don't want it.
Why not?
I want darkness. I want 12 hours of light.
You're Donald Trump?
12 hours of dark. That's what I want.
You want to be on the equator all year.
Well, listen, there are certain things that are fun to do in the day. There are certain things that are fun to do in the night.
You get those blackout shades. And
I don't want to do things that are meant to be done in the night in the day.
Going back to our discussion of brothels, we had earlier in the program. So I wonder if the brothel business is slow, like when there's all, it's light all the time.
I bet it is. I'm assuming, this is an assumption, I'm assuming that if you walk out of a brothel into bright sunshine, that is a warning that something in your life has gone terribly wrong.
Because then someone might see you. Like, that's the problem. Let's not kid ourselves. Let's get real on this program. The last thing you want to do is walk out of that brothel, and then be like, oh, it's Frank from accounting. Like, you don't want to see, like, right? That's a hard discussion. They're like, oh, what were you doing in there? Because they have signs on the doors.
If I was Frank from accounting, I'd be like, they need their books done, too.
What is the conversation like? Now we're way off topic. We are way off topic. But what is the conversation like if you are in, let's say, a place with legalized brothels?
Yes.
And you're there and you walk out of this. This is, by the way, let's put this on there. 100% hypothetical. Like, this is not even I'm considering this. This is I might as well be talking about the last time I did heart surgery. Right? This is 100% hypothetical. But you walk out of that establishment, and you literally walk in, and it's your neighbor. What is someone of that ilk? Your pastor.
You're both men?
Well, they're not in the establishment. They're just walking on the street. They're touring. They're like, oh, Anne Frank's house. Like, whatever. I'm in Amsterdam now.
The red light district is not near Anne Frank's.
I understand
house.
That.
Although, Anne Frank's house is not in Amsterdam.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
It's not in Denmark?
No, it's in Amsterdam.
It's in Amsterdam.
Oh. Well, Anne Frank's
house is in Amsterdam?
You don't know Anne Frank's history, and you don't know the hemispheres.
I could have swore it was in Denmark.
It's in Amsterdam.
Denmark's where they make nice wooden tables.
Also, home Caroline Wozniacki.
So you walk out. These people are touring. Oh, Heineken Brewery, like whatever. And they're doing the whole experience. Windmills, right? And you walk out of an establishment of the evening.
Of ill repute.
And you walk down, and you literally like run into each other as you're walking out the door.
Mm-hmm.
What is that moment like?
You look them in the eye. You make sure that there's acknowledgement that you both saw each other. You give them the chin down head nod. And you go about your business. You mind your own.
Everybody does their part.
No, you.
You mind your own is what you do. Keep to yourself.
Do your part.
What if this person is a business associate of
what do you care?
Your partner.
What do you care?
Your spouse.
It's none of my business. You give them the look. You make sure that you know and they know.
What is the look?
You make sure that you know and they know.
What is the look?
Then you give them the nod. The knowing nod. You hit him with the nod, and that's where it ends. That's where it ends.
What is the look? I don't even know what that look is.
That's where it ends.
Did we all three independently go to a Dunkin' Donuts?
We did.
We all three went and got medium-sized iced coffees on our own.
Totally separate of each other, yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. So at any rate, I would find that to be one of the world's most awkward. What if you walk out? All right, I'll take it one step more. You walk out and you see either your priest or your rabbi.
You look him in the eye. You let him know. You see them, they see you. You give them the chin down, head nod, and you go about your business.
There's no shame. There's no.
What if you walk out and you see your mother and grandmother?
Oh, boy. But now you should, in all fairness, you should know that they were going to be in the same country.
Yeah.
But you're right. Let's say they're doing – they went on a surprise trip. Yeah. Yeah. Then what? Don't tell me.
You look them in the eye.
So you look them in the eye. And?
You make sure that they know and you know. You give them the chin down, head nod. And you go about your business.
So you just walk away?
Walk away.
All right. All right. The last call. And this it gets. I mean, it doesn't get much. Did we already go daughter? You see your daughter? Give me.
We did not go daughter.
You look them in the eye. You make sure that you know and they know. You go, you know what mom is like, and you walk on your way.
You're a single father. It raises more questions.
Yeah, that's true. It's a situational analysis at that point.
She walks into the room. She goes, Mom?
I don't follow.
She doesn't know where her mother is.
What?
What if you're a single father?
Okay.
Yeah.
Single father.
And you walk out, and that she's like, It's a clue. It's a lead for her.
Your daughter thinks that. More of an issue. But if your daughter's young enough to be that dumb, then she's dumb enough for you to make something up.
Sure. Okay. We can only hope. You made this uncomfortable, Mike. All of a sudden,
really did make it uncomfortable. And now, because you made it so uncomfortable, come up with a segue for how we get from this. To talking about
concussions, concussions in youth football,
that the NFL claimed that their youth, the youth program that they backed, Heads Up Tackling.
All right, so concussion protocol. The trainer, first thing he does, checking for concussions.
Look him in the eye.
And take it away. Take it away.
I know
that was a good segue.
You know.
Tell me that wasn't a bad.
That is a very good segue.
That was pretty good.
He looks you in the eye. You know what he knows.
He holds up three fingers.
Yep. That works. So the NFL may have told something of a half-truth.
The NFL has been trying for the last number of years now to make the perception surrounding its game, especially when it's played by kids, that football is safe. They introduced the heads-up tackling program in youth football. And they claimed that if coaches had standardized instruction, which is what they were trying to provide, if they taught this method, it would make football safer. They backed that up with some data. They said that programs that use the heads-up football way saw injuries decline roughly 70%, saw concussions decline roughly 30%. That's what the NFL said. That's what USA Football said. Turns out, that's not really true.
No.
Those numbers were pulled from somewhere.
Preliminary data. It was not conclusive.
They were not – exactly.
That was not the end of the study. That was preliminary information.
Nowhere near final numbers. It would be like reporting an election result as final when 5% of the precincts were reporting.
Exactly. And you're like – yep. And we only did farms. Like, yeah, exactly. It's a very good analogy. And they reported – some false data. Why that ever actually leaked out, I don't know. Why they felt they needed to put a press release out for that, I don't know.
It's because the New York Times looked at the claim. USA Football and the Heads Up Tackling initiative, which is fully backed by the NFL,
sure.
This was the numbers that they were putting out there and everything.
I don't know why the NFL, USA Football, or the organization that was hired to do this ever put those numbers out in the first place.
Oh, I know why.
Because they look good.
Because
they look good.
Because 800,000 kids have stopped playing youth football in the last 6 years.
But I guess that's my point. It is very irresponsible to release false data.
Yes.
And that's what they did.
Yes.
They released data that was not statistically reliable.
This is, by the way, not the first time that the NFL has either cherry-picked or straight-up misrepresented data to make football appear more safer than it is.
Yes. And so the NFL ran with it, posted it on their website, lauded it as a success. Now, what's interesting, though, there are some some other organizations, I forget, I'm blanking on another football organization that has instituted more stringent rules about contact that actually has had some success in reducing concussions. So there is some protocol that actually works. It happens to not be the protocol that the NFL and Heads Up Football is using. So I forget which organization, what's one of the youth football organizations. There are protocols that are actually being implemented that could reduce. And now the main reason is because they basically are doing no contact. I mean, they are limiting, particularly in practice, to almost no contact. And that's, you want to make football safer in practice, don't let people hit each other. It's very simple. It makes for worse football, but, I mean, you're right. I mean, if no one ever hits anyone, it's going to make it for really tough to play contact football on Saturdays or Sundays. But they misrepresented the data. And again, you never know what the truth is, but it sounded like they didn't even realize their numbers were completely wrong. Now, that may or may not be true. They either knew that their numbers were wrong and they didn't care, or, and I actually tend to believe this, they didn't even bother to follow up with the study. They didn't even bother to read the study.
Probably worse in a way.
Oh, I think it is worse.
I mean, outright ignorance is probably worse than lying.
In this case, because they understand how high the stakes are. In this case, I think, it speaks to the idea that the NFL isn't particularly concerned with how safe youth football is. They're just concerned with making sure that more kids are signing up. That's all they really care about.
Which is not happening. Significantly less kids are signing up. I mean, you even hear parents, children whose parents play in the NFL say that they're not going to let their kids play football.
No.
You hear it all the time now.
I wouldn't let my kids play football. I mean, what my oldest came home with a flyer from youth football league, and he's like, "Can I play?" And he didn't even get the full sentence out. We're like, "Nope, nope, not interested."
The only football you're playing has a U in the spelling. That would be football.
Football. And they do play that. What do you think about swimming? What do you think about swimming?
I think as a parent, I'm not a parent,
brutal.
But you're a parent. They should not be participating in swimming because you would have to go watch swim meets.
Well, the practice schedule is rough, too.
And I can't imagine.
Nope, they're not good.
Anything worse.
Not good.
Than sitting in a hot, humid natatorium watching youth swimming.
It's rough.
I would imagine that is.
If you think watching Michael Phelps swim is bad, I mean, imagine someone about a third of his speed, you know?
A third? That's very generous.
A third? Taking three times as long? Come on.
You're telling me. Hold on. You're telling me that if we went in a pool, that Sloan could go down and back.
Sloan's not doing youth swimming right now.
That a youth swimmer,
an eight-year-old
youth swimmer,
could go
down and back.
Three times at the,
Before Michael Phelps could do it three times.
Yeah.
I think Michael Phelps wins.
Boy, that's a great. Well, that was like Shaq versus. Remember that? They actually did that. Not to equate Shaq to like an 8-year-old swimmer, but that seems fair. But boy, that is actually a fun contest.
I think Michael Phelps wins.
It's almost as good as when who is it that raced the cheetah?
Oh yeah, I remember. I forget who it was.
And they, of course, they cheated because the cheetah can't turn. The cheetah doesn't know where the line is. I mean, they totally
cheetah might not have even known it was in a race.
I don't think the cheetah did. The cheetah was just like, how do I break down that fence in between us? Because I'm going to bite that guy's leg off. If I get even a half inch closer to him, I'm taking him downtown. Saw an interesting piece, by the way, about the surfer. Who's the surfer who got attacked by the shark?
I don't know.
Bethany Hamilton.
Yeah. No, the male surfer. He survived. There's a shark, and he fought him off. Interesting piece.
Warren Sapp got bit by a shark this week.
He did.
I know. Warren Sapp got bit by a shark this week.
Well, I'm going to tell you. I have friends who worked for Tampa Press for quite some time who spent a lot of time covering Warren Sapp. He's a good target.
He's a
lot of meat.
He's a big man. Here's something that needs to stop happening to society. This needs to stop happening.
What?
Mick Fanning.
Nick Fanning, yeah.
Mick.
If you – didn't we have him on the show? I feel like he was on the –
We had the
head of the World Surf Organization.
Oh, right. He was talking about him. This is something that needs
to keep up with our guest list.
This is something that needs to stop happening in society.
What?
If you go into the ocean and get bit by a shark, that is not a shark attack. You're in their world. That is a shark defense.
Well, then there is no – then the only shark attack would be if a shark comes onto land.
Exactly. If you're in your bathtub and you get bit by a shark,
well, how about
that
right.
shark attacked
okay,
you.
Okay, all right. Then let's hit middle ground on this. I don't know that I agree with you, but let's hit middle ground. Let's take sharks that weave their way into uncommon territories. Say bull sharks that have been known, particularly generations before we polluted the hell out of it, to find their way up the Hudson.
That is so. That makes that shark more aggressive. However,
this is not where they're supposed to be.
Do you know any humans that live in the water?
Aquaman.
Do you know any non-fictitious characters that live in the
water?
People with houseboats?
Yeah,
does that count?
No, they live on the water.
No, that's a good
they
point.
Live on the water.
I'll accept that answer.
They live on the water.
How about from the movie Splash, that mermaid figure?
Do you know any non-fictional characters? Is no.
That live.
Ariel from The Little Mermaid, also not real.
So
spoiler alert.
Actually live in the water full time. You know, I don't know a
lot
of
people. So therefore, the water is the shark's domain. And when you're in the shark's house and the shark bites you, the shark didn't attack you. It was defending its turf. That shark was standing its ground.
Is there any such thing as a lion attack?
Yes. When you're not in the Serengeti. Are you wandering the Serengeti Plains? Did you get mauled by a lion?
Well, that's not a lion attack.
I'm
going to Jackson Hole in a couple of
weeks. That sounds awful. Why?
That is the singular worst response I've ever received to a I'm going
so
to Jackson.
Weird.
Well, I mean, what is
why,
that?
You do realize we have a lot of great places. Why are you going to Wyoming?
It's like it's a big resort.
You do realize we have a lot of resorts in nice places.
That's a giant ski resort. Look, just because you have less physicality than a newborn infant or a 98-year-old man, and to you, if you can't spend your entire vacation either on a golf cart,
yes.
or
to be fair, I walk. I prefer to walk.
Or in a mud bath, something like that.
A mud bath. That would be nice, exfoliate. Or then get a nice massage.
Or having a famous chef.
Spring for the 60, that's good, yeah.
Hand feed you.
Hopefully
God
iron,
forbid.
Hopefully an iron chef.
You go on a vacation. So I'm going to go to whatever. What's that big park up there? The
Yellowstone.
I'm going to do that stuff. So the problem with this vacation, now that we got
here we go. Now we get to the part where Jeff's right.
No, it is. I'm going with my in-laws.
You're going to Wyoming with your in-laws.
And not just me, the whole family.
That is the most depressing statement in the history of statements.
I'm not so sure we're all coming back. I'm
going to Wyoming with my in-laws.
It is not going to be the easiest.
That's the best word in that sentence is going.
It's not going to be easy. I'm not going to lie. I've been thinking a lot about this, how this is all going to happen.
I mean,
and here's the word. It gets worse. It gets worse. They have rented a house that we're all staying in together. Like, we're not even,
that's
I don't have
awful.
The,
that's awful.
It's here's like a three-bedroom house. Like, I know. There's not, that means there's common living area.
This is not even good.
Hotel where we each have our own
But here's the thing.
Retreats.
Like, we've talked about this. Staying at a friend's house, or like at an acquaintance's house.
This morning.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing
there
in the
world. There's nothing worse. When someone's like, hey, come on out, you stay at my place.
But you know what might be worse?
Staying with your in-laws.
No. Staying in a rented house.
Yep.
Because now you don't even have, like, the comforts of home. You don't have the service of a hotel. You get the privacy of a hotel, but the crappiness of the friend's house.
That's right. You don't even have the memories. You got nothing. That's why. But you know what? When you get put out of business, Airbnb.
I don't get Airbnb at all.
I know people that do this.
I do,
why,
too.
Why do I want to use your towels? Like, why do I want to? Like, I don't want to.
Here's what I really don't get about Airbnb. I kind of get it.
We're never
going
to get them as a sponsor now, are we? We are never.
I kind of get it.
You're just RotoWire guys.
Yeah.
You don't need Airbnb.
I kind of get it if.
What?
Like, you own, like, say you have a vacation home and you only use it a little and you rent it out.
I understand the people
when
that
are not using it.
Oh, yeah.
I get that. I don't understand the Airbnbs where the people who are renting the room in the house are still in the house.
Or like, hey, we're going to be out of town next weekend. Let's put up our house. I don't want someone in my house like that.
I mean, I get that slightly more than, hey, I live in a two-bedroom house. You want to come stay in the other bedroom for a week? Yeah, I'll still be here, but don't mind me. That's what I don't get. Who's inviting strangers to sleep in their house?
You don't like B&Bs at all, do you?
I actually do like B&Bs.
Well, that's not
very, very nice and relaxing. But a B&B is basically
a
hotel.
Just one word away. You're one word away. Like, we once stayed at a B&B, though, where it seemed like their shower was in our area.
Yeah.
Like, I once stayed in a
There's confusing boundaries.
I once stayed in a B&B where we heard the water on and we were afraid to exit our room because we weren't sure what we were going to see. Right? I mean, I didn't actually even know what was going on. So there are some boundary issues in B&Bs. You get very close to the people who work there. Are we friends? Are we family?
Question for you.
Are we still in the NFL now?
Question for you.
Okay.
When you decided on this family vacation to Jacksonville,
I didn't decide. No. I did not decide on going anywhere.
Why did you not speak up and go, you know what here's nicest time of year? San Diego.
Well, no, but
would that have been a better vacation?
No, I actually like these resorts. My wife was out in Aspen. It's not that different.
It's different. You compared Aspen, Colorado to Jacksonville, Wyoming?
Vail and Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville is a lovely resort. It's a big ski resort. What are you now?
It's Aspen.
What's that?
So it's Aspen.
Well, Aspen's a little better. We should have been. Yes. Should we have gone to Aspen? Yes. But I wasn't given that option. I wasn't given the option of, do you want to go to Aspen or do you want to go to Jackson Hole? I was told, hey, we're all going to Jackson Hole.
Why didn't you speak up and put your foot down?
I probably did and said, I don't want to do that. But what am I going to do? It comes with a marriage. All right? There are things that come with a marriage.
I don't want to get married anymore.
You shouldn't.
People are like, Jeff, why don't you want to get married? Yeah.
Expense paid. Trip to Jackson Hole. No, of course you shouldn't get married. Of course you shouldn't. It's one of those things you'll look back and regret. Oh, that tattoo. I mean, this is probably not the direction this segment has gone. I spent the first part of the show asking my good friend and HBO correspondent, John Frankel, if my wife got into trouble during her pseudo-business trip to Aspen. And then the second half of the show, I have spoken very poorly about an upcoming trip with my in-laws and then told the listening audience that I think marriage is a horrible idea. This show has gone from a very shaky place to now what one might consider good collateral to use in a divorce suit.
Not even mentioning that we tackled what is the protocol when you or someone you know is exiting a brothel.
I like that part, though.
That was useful. That was actually useful.
Useful information for people, yes.
So let's get back to the NFL.
In case you're just tuned in, own it. Own it. Whether you're exiting or you see someone you know exiting,
We didn't even get to that part. What if you are the other side of this? Because I'm not going to a brothel. So let's say I'm walking around in Amsterdam and I see one of my best friends. I see you. Well, it's different for you because I don't care. You don't have a spouse, and I figure you're going anyway. I just see you as doing that. So, but let's say. By the way, I'm not judging. All right, so. So let's say I see someone coming out of that. Let's say I see my rabbi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same advice applies. Look him in the eye. Chin down, head nod. Go about your business. Mind your own.
No matter what role you're in, you always want to be
the alpha
in that situation.
That is the only response to whether you're exiting or you're seeing the person exiting. That's
okay.
All you do.
Okay.
Acknowledge.
Well, all right, how about this? I don't have this particular situation because I don't have any sisters. What if you see your brother-in-law? Oh, boy. Now it's gotten really.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
But.
He's no.
Gonna give you the same
your brother-in-law. Mm. You see your brother-in-law.
Yeah. Is he a good guy? You like him?
He's walking out of a brothel.
It's a lot of gray area there. Maybe he's Frank from accounting. Again, they have bookkeeping needs as well.
He's not an accountant.
QuickBooks doesn't update itself.
Except it does.
He's walking out of the brothel?
He's walking out.
I feel like it would be worse if you're walking out of the brothel.
Well, it
depends on your marital situation.
Yeah. No, but you see your brother-in-law. He's married to your sister.
I mean, you got to think family first in this instance. You got to go family first, I believe.
So now you're not just nodding your head.
No, you do. You nod. You look him in the eye. Chin down. You go about your business. Then you call your sister.
So guess who I ran into?
Just a heads up. You might want to look into this. It's going to make that family vacation Jackson Hole a little awkward.
Who's bunking with who? All right, here's what I think we should do, because this has gone off the rails.
Yeah, it has. It really has.
This has gone completely. This is what happens when you come into a show without a rundown.
This is what happens when you come into the show 6 minutes before we go
again,
on air.
We started that way.
Hey, what should we talk about the second hour?
It's actually double the time that we had from last week.
In all fairness, true, and I got baggage with me today. All right? So.
Children.
He's referring to his two children, by the way. That's the baggage.
All right? And don't get me started on that now. But that's A. B, that's not – yes, the problem is we had a good first hour, a real loose second hour, and you threw me off to start the show because you started with your hard-hitting news like, today on the show,
blood
in the streets.
I liked it. That's what we're going to do from now on.
All right,
I liked
it. Great. But how about this? When we come back, why don't we revisit the NFL and then also segue into another important NFL story, which is Aaron Rodgers and his brother, who is – you know,
final two in The Bachelor.
Yeah.
He could be getting engaged this week.
Is Chad even a figure on this
Chad's
anymore?
Gone now. But, Chad was eliminated.
I know, but
Chad's
is he
been long gone.
But does he even come back at all?
Well, last week was the Men Tell All episode. He was on that, okay. And now he's gone.
Yeah. He's really the only, because I don't really watch much, but he was
no,
the one.
No, same.
Yeah. All right,
that'd
so.
Be great if he crashed the last episode like a WWE event.
Ooh,
that's Chad's music!
So why don't we take the break, regroup, come
we,
back.
We to, do need to do that.
Come back to the NFL. And then revisit, go to a much more hard-hitting topic, which is Aaron Rodgers' brother on The Bachelor.
Sounds like a plan. More of the classroom ahead. Fox 20, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Back in the classroom, I'm Jeff Brault alongside Mike Wallace. Keith Strudler has left the building because his baggage has made a mess or something. I don't know. But Keith Strudler's gone, Mike Wallace, so it's you and me now.
I hate when your baggage gets sick.
Before we went to break, we promised the people that we were going to revisit the NFL and sorry, I got a little distracted there. Revisit the NFL and their heads up football initiative, which they claimed significantly reduces injuries and concussions in youth sports. It hasn't. According to the New York Times, which is we dug deeper into the material. Mike, I'm going to go on a limb and say you're a football fan.
I'm a football fan.
I, too, am a football fan. Do you find, as a run-of-the-mill football fan, that this thought that football's not safe in any way impacts how you enjoy football?
Yes, just because of all the new rule changes and different regulations, like you don't see hits like you used to.
No. That, so you wish football was more violent.
Yes, absolutely. It's more fun when it's more violent.
It is, but isn't
it's
there
more
a little
dangerous.
Isn't there a little cognitive dissonance where you're like, I'm cheering this guy getting his head torn off?
Yeah, but I mean, what did people go to gladiator fights for?
I don't argue there's an appeal there.
Yeah.
But is that okay?
I don't want to see anybody get hurt. I wish
well, yeah, you kind of do. You're like, I want him to hit him harder.
Yeah. Well, I don't want them to die.
So that's the line.
Yeah.
Physical incapacitation, fine. Broken bone, hazard of the job. But as long as they remain alive,
look, I don't
you're
want
fine
anybody
with that.
To get hurt. But
you just want to be hit harder and more viciously.
Hard hits are fun.
That doesn't at all. Because like I also, big football fan. Love football. Yeah. I find that the more that comes out about how unsafe the game is and how these players are slowly killing themselves.
Mm-hmm. People are retiring early.
It makes it harder for me to really enjoy the game.
Yeah, it does. And some of the best players in the league are retiring early for that. Chris Borland.
Chris Borland was, I mean, he left after a year.
Yeah, and he wasn't Defensive Rookie of the Year, was he?
No, but he was a very good,
very good
defensive rookie for the 49ers linebacker.
Patrick Willis, one of the best middle linebackers of all time, retired at an early age.
I mean, you're seeing, I mean, even guys like Calvin Johnson, he made his money, got his $100 million.
Didn't
made
see
his
the
money,
team it, going anywhere.
Retired at 30.
Yeah.
And this is becoming more and more common that top stars retiring at 30. And so if you're the NFL and you see this double-edged sword of, all right, less children are participating in sports because their parents feel the game is unsafe, and participation in youth football is down 800,000 people from 3 million to 2.2 million just in the last 6 years. If the kids aren't allowed to play, and the very best in the world are getting out of the game as soon as possible, sometimes getting out of the game before they've even maximized their earning potential, like Chris Borland. He had to give back like 75% of his signing bonus because he retired so early. Those two things coupled together, does that not make you worry about the future of football?
It absolutely does. And another side of this is some of the greats speaking out against having their children play football. Like those are the guys who made a lot of people want to play football. And do you want your children to play football? No. I would not let them play football in fear of traumatic head injuries.
So clearly what needs to happen, the shift that needs to happen, is that we need to stop having our best football players playing football and start having our best football players as contestants on The Bachelor.
Oh, absolutely. That would be great.
This is obviously the next step.
Uh-huh.
This is the way we keep these players that we've all decided that we like and we love and we worship as heroes. This is the way we keep them in the public spot. Mm-hmm. I don't want them getting hit. I want them hitting on beautiful women.
I've always said Jesse Palmer is my favorite backup quarterback of all time.
Jesse Palmer, one of the original NFL Bachelors. Mm-hmm. This season of The Bachelor features Jordan Rodgers, who was in the NFL in the same way that perhaps you at the bar after you've had a couple cocktails tell someone you were in the NFL. He had a cup of coffee in the NFL. He played a little bit in the CFL, a good college quarterback at Vanderbilt. His claim to fame, Jordan Rodgers, is that Aaron Rodgers is his brother. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers, elite quarterback, Green Bay Packers, dating international superstar of stage and screen, Olivia Munn, apparently has something of a frosty relationship with his brother, Jordan. This came up on the show. Jordan aired out some dirty laundry. He said, in trying to win the heart of the Bachelorette, that he doesn't have a great relationship with his brother. You know, because you have to, part of winning in The Bachelors, you have to make yourself open to the other person. You have to open up to them. And so for Jordan Rodgers, that meant opening up about Aaron Rodgers. And because this is the NFL silly season, the weeks before training camp, where you got to report some NFL news, but we don't know exactly what NFL news there's going to be to talk about right now because not a lot's going on. Aaron Rodgers had to answer, I can't believe this happened, had to answer his brother's criticism, well, not necessarily even criticism, comments made about Aaron Rodgers on The Bachelor. A real question that was given to Aaron Rodgers, NFL quarterback, the eve of a big season for the Green Bay Packers, one in which they could be very successful. How did you feel about what your brother said on The Bachelor? And what Aaron Rodgers said was very little. He goes, I don't watch the show. I heard about it. I wish him luck. That's cold.
The thing is, what do you want him to say?
I mean, what you want him to say is you want him to get into a vicious takedown of the whole situation. That's never going to happen. Aaron Rodgers is maybe as boring an interview as you're going to find in the NFL, which is fine. It's a self-preservation thing, I get.
Time, you literally just spelled out relax. That was it.
I get it. I get why professional athletes are boring, because you look at a guy who's not boring, let's say Cam Newton, and he gets killed for it. So I get why you get up there and you just spout cliches and you don't ever say anything controversial. That said, I want to know more about this drama. I want to know more about why this relationship has soured, because Jordan Rodgers, the Bachelor contestant, sort of made it sound like it soured because Aaron Rodgers got a big head. He became NFL MVP, Super Bowl-winning quarterback, dating Olivia Munn. Kind of forgot where he came from a little bit. And now he's on the outs with his family. And Aaron Rodgers has said, I'm not going to talk about that. That's a personal, private matter. Which is the right answer, the answer he should give, but it's not the answer we want.
That almost came up and hit you.
I threw my pencil. I was so enraged. I threw my pencil down. And it did. It almost bounced back and hit me, but luckily I caught it again.
Yeah, so you feel real strongly about the plight of the Rodgers family, huh?
I really do. I feel like I invite them into my home every Sunday. I feel like I know them. The Rodgers are, for all intents and purposes now, the Rodgers are the Kardashians of the NFL.
You know, it makes rooting for Jordan a lot easier on The Bachelorette because, you know, he doesn't have a family anymore. You want him to find a family of his own. Maybe he wins.
I think Jordan still has them. I think Aaron is the one who's on the outs with the family.
Yeah.
I think Aaron is the one who's on the outs with the family. Because, I mean, obviously, I didn't watch that. That's not true. I absolutely watched it. The hometown date the hometown date.
There was no Aaron, no Olivia.
There was no Aaron, but it was a thing.
Yeah, I get it.
So I think Aaron's the one on the outs. It's a problem. It's a problem. It's such a big problem. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about it. We'll have grades of the week. More of the Clash at Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. This is the Classroom. It's your weekly smart look at sports. I'm Jeff Peralta. Dr. Keith Struthers had to step out for a second. Me and Mike Wallace.
We're operating man down.
We're hanging out. You can like us on Facebook, ESPN The Classroom. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN _ Classroom. Archives available. Podcast section of iTunes, ESPN The Classroom. So Jordan Rodgers is on The Bachelor. He's the brother of Aaron Rodgers. Travis Kelce, the tight end, he's going to have his own reality show on the E! Channel. It's called Catching Kelce. It's a dating show. It's very Bachelor-ish. That's coming out soon. All of these NFL stars becoming involved in reality television.
Odell Beckham was dating a Kardashian.
He was? Which one?
Khloe. Well, for like 2 weeks.
Odell Beckham dated Khloe?
Yeah.
I totally missed that. When did that happen?
Yeah, people were freaking out about
was
that.
Was this pre?
It was a curse.
This was after the Lamar Odom thing?
Oh, yeah. Way after.
Well,
this,
I totally
this
missed
a few
that.
Weeks ago.
I thought the Kardashians were off of athletes and were on to musicians.
They'll always be on athletes. Come on. Don't be naive.
Wow. I totally missed that. I wonder if he'll be on this or next season of Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I hope not.
We haven't had really any NFL star power in that show since the Reggie Bush era.
So Kelce's got his own
channel. Kelce's got his own dating show coming up.
Much in the style of the Flavor of Love.
All right. I think there's an obvious answer to this question. If you could see any NFL star on a reality style dating show.
Gronk.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right. There is no number two.
Yeah, no, there is.
No, it has to be Gronk. It has to be. But I don't know how that would work. I don't. I'm thinking about it. I mean, I'm shocked that the Rob Gronkowski thing has not gotten old.
Oh, no.
I'm shocked because it hasn't. It is as hilarious and lovable now as it was 5 years ago. But I feel like it would get old if it was in your face every week. But maybe it wouldn't.
He's
I don't
just
know.
Such a lovable guy.
He is. And the thing that got me about Gronk is, and I like his persona. I think it's hilarious. It's kind of exactly what you want, like a big 6'6" tight end to act like. When he went on, so there's Gronk erotica that exists.
Oh, yeah, I know.
People have written dirty stories about Rob Gronkowski. And he went on Jimmy Kimmel Live and did like a live reading of his own erotica. He didn't write it, but he is the featured character. I believe it was called A Gronking to Remember, the name of the book. You can look this up online, him reading it. That is when Rob Gronkowski, to me, could do no wrong. But I do wonder if he would be overexposed on it on a dating show. Because here's the thing. Nobody knows boo about Travis Kelce. I couldn't remember if it was him or it was his brother. I don't care about him. He just happens to be a good-looking guy who plays in the NFL. He's not necessarily an NFL star the way like Rob Gronkowski would be if he was on a dating show. You know what I would like to see on a dating show? So you got Tom Brady and Giselle. They're made. You see that now Julian Edelman is dating a supermodel.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
Yeah, I know Danny Amendola's girlfriend. I worked with her at DirecTV.
She's a supermodel?
No, she's the host of a fantasy football show.
Yeah. See, the Patriots, now I feel like, because you got that in with Tom Brady, Giselle, he's now in that world. And, like, he can bring his boys into that world, too. And he did it. Julian Edelman is now dating a supermodel. Julian Edelman, fine football player. Fine football player. Does not deserve to be dating a supermodel.
No, you don't think so?
I don't. I feel like that's reserved for the Tom Brady's of the world.
I think you're just jealous.
I am.
You want to be the one
absolutely
a supermodel.
Absolutely. But I'll be honest. I shouldn't be dating a supermodel. I shouldn't be.
But Julian Edelman shouldn't?
No. He's not of that caliber.
Supermodels are people, too. They have freedom of choice, Jeff.
I'd like to see that reality show. I would.
Of Edelman?
I'd like to see Tom Brady and Giselle essentially, like, molding their friend groups together. Look, this happens in the real world. When your friend starts dating someone, your friends and their friends intermingle. This is how it happens.
Sounds like you're just, like, recasting Entourage with Patriots players.
I would like to see the intermingling of Tom Brady and Giselle setting up their friends and teammates with each other. I'd like to watch that love story unfold.
Do you have a name for the show?
I don't. I don't yet. Literally,
there's some pun in there.
The last 8 minutes of my life is just stream of consciousness. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know why I'm saying it. But this is what we're doing.
Yeah, no, this show
we're talking
about
NFL stars in reality television because Aaron Rodgers' brother Jordan is a finalist on The Bachelor. I think he's going to win.
Yeah,
Personal opinion.
Hot take. I think JoJo's a little shallow. She just wants that in with Olivia Munn. She just wants to be friends with Olivia Munn.
But that's not good because Jordan and Aaron Rodgers are estranged. I bet Jordan's never even met Olivia Munn.
I mean, maybe JoJo is the thing that brings them all back together.
Because he's got like that sweet Texan charm.
Yeah.
It's possible. What we need, less concussions in the NFL. Less hard hitting. Less bone jarring, de-cleating open field tackles. More cameras following NFL stars as they try to date. You want to make America great again? Let's roll that tape. Roll that tape.
So TMZ Sports. We just want to replace Sunday NFL Countdown with TMZ Sports.
I think so. In fact, let's shorten every
let's
NFL
just make
game.
Everything reality
let's
show.
Shorten every game from four quarters to two quarters. That would make it two halves. Shortened halves. And then in that empty time slot, the sport of dating.
All right, so let's try to combine the shows on Sundays, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So what are you doing to each game to make it more like a reality TV show?
To the game specifically? Nothing.
All right.
I'm shortening the game, freeing up a lot of time slot for more personality-driven reality TV.
Okay. So before the game, I'm letting all the wives and girlfriends into the locker room.
This
half-time,
is what you got to think about now.
In-laws come in.
Absolutely,
you
they
just
do.
Unleash the in-laws.
Yes.
Into the locker
I
room.
I like it.
Can you think about the game? Try.
I like
are
this.
Are you being nagged?
I like this. Now what we're doing is making the NFL.
Uh-huh.
We are taking it from a physical game and making it much more of a mental game.
Yeah.
Oh, I like this.
Yeah, head games.
I'm watching this. Oh, I like this. This is good.
We're taking the traumatic brain injuries to just mental anguish. What's worse? Probably CTE. Got to go CTE.
I think you got to go CTE. But in the immediate moment, anybody who's ever spent time with in-laws or a girlfriend's family.
Can you imagine if Miko Grimes just got to be on the sideline?
Some people shouldn't Miko be allowed Grimes. To tweet, and she's one of them.
Yeah. And Who's the coach of the Buccaneers?
I know, but I can't.
Is it Lovie Smith? It's Lovie Smith.
Yes, it is Lovie Smith.
Lovie Smith just has to get like a security team to keep Miko Grimes from attacking him on the sideline. That's great television.
That is great television. Oh, there's something here. This is the genesis of a great idea. We haven't quite put it all together yet. If you're the person that can put it all together, tweet at us at @ESPN_classroom because these are your grades of the week.
Grades of the week.
Maybe this is a type of NFL injury we can prevent with our ideas. Vikings third string quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, out 3 months, tried to kick in his own door, and while doing so, tore some tendons in his ankle. Whoops. So you might be asking yourself, why did Heinicke try to kick in his own door? Answer. He accidentally locked himself out after checking out a recent screening of The Conjuring 2. And he thought the best way to get back into his room would be to kick in the door. And as he tried to do it, his foot slipped. It went through one of those like panes of glass that are near. And he hurt himself in trying to get back into his own apartment.
That's an absolutely adrenaline-fueled move. I think he was afraid.
Important to know now what the grade was going to be here. Heinicke going to see The Conjuring 2. It was going to be grade that choice of movie. Because there's a lot of good movies out right now. And he went to see The Conjuring 2? First of all, we don't need a Conjuring 2. Conjuring 1 was enough. That was enough.
I think it resonated with him. He was home alone. It was dark. He got a little spooked.
He got a little spooked.
Tried to get in.
He needed to get inside.
As fast as possible.
I think we've all had that moment, right, where you're outside, you're walking by yourself, and you're like, I need to move a little faster and get inside because I'm a little spooked right now.
Yeah. Out of the corner of your eyes, you think you see these shadows moving? Is it a ghost?
Something that went bump in the night. Do we know? If Keith Struthers here, we'd give it a grade, but he's not, so we can't. Here's something that I found interesting this week. LSU football star. I got it here. Lewis Neal, defensive end. Lewis Neal has a side job. You know, he goes to LSU. He's a college student. He's taking classes, playing football. He's also day trading on the foreign exchange, basically a stock market. And he claims that he makes, some days, $6,000 day trading. He goes through his routine. Wake up, day trade, class, practice, sleep, repeat. That's not bad. $6,000 a day? It's a heck of a side hustle.
Or he's just laundering.
Or it's just fraud.
Where's all that money coming from?
Here's what really struck me about this. Lewis Neal said, quote, it's not hard, talking about day trading on the foreign exchange. It sounds hard. I couldn't do it.
He's an LSU football player?
He's an LSU defensive end. Day trading, making thousands of dollars a day.
I mean, the boosters might pay him thousands of dollars a day.
Whoa. What if that's the scheme now?
That's the laundering thing. Like, make up a job. Like, make up this fantastic job. It's good publicity. You're in a great job.
If you build a better rule, they will build a better cheater.
Yeah.
I still think Lewis Neal's on the up and up. I say good for him.
Yeah. If the NFL doesn't work out, future on Wall Street.
That's all the time that we've got for the classroom this week. I want to thank our guest, John Frankel from HBO's Real Sports, coming on talking about Rio. We got into the NFL. Making up numbers or cherry-picking numbers about the safety of youth football and professional football alongside of it. Dr. Keith Strudler had to vacate the classroom early this morning, but I think Mike Wallace and I did an okay job covering for him.
A star is born.
This is how it starts. Yeah. You might have just Wally-pipped Keith Strudler right on out of here.
God, I hope so. That would be awesome. Except I have him for class this semester.
Will Keith Strudler be back next week? Maybe. But I guarantee that Mike and I will. My name's Jeff Brault. 10 a.m. to noon next week, another smart look at sports live from the Marist College Center for Sports Communication here in the classroom. We will see you next week. Class is dismissed.